Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. My guest today is Millie G. You will know her from Instagram, I'm sure, but she's someone that I have genuinely followed and loved for ages. The thing with Millie is that she is such a brilliant advocate for talking about the recovery journey from eating disorders and disordered eating. She is someone who shares the highs and lows of that process, and I really relate to a lot of the experiences that she talks about. I have followed her from afar and love all that she talks about, and the community that she's created as well of women and girls who are wanting to move on from, you know, obsessing about food and exercise and really creating a healthy relationship with both of those things. So I'm so excited to have her as a guest today. Just as a caveat, in today's episode, we do talk about eating disorders. If that's not something that you're comfortable to hear about right now, please skip this episode. But if you are, listen on, and I really hope you enjoy. Welcome, Millie. Millie, I'm so excited to have you here today. And I think that I, for one, have loved following your journey, and I really love how open and honest you've been online, particularly talking about the non-linear recovery from an eating disorder, which I think is so important. I think one of the places that I would love to start, and we were chatting about this just before we came on the podcast, is really understanding about those kind of early signs of, you know, insecurities within your body. I was saying to you about how I remember, you know, a really specific moment for me was when I started to get boobs in like primary school, and that was such a big insecurity for me because none of my friends had them at the time. And sort of those key moments of like changing for PE, for example, where you're like having to strip off and you're like, oh my God. And just starting to notice those sort of internal thoughts of, oh, my body doesn't look the same as hers. And, you know, so I'd love to understand from your perspective, when did those thoughts start to happen? And when were you kind of conscious of feeling a little bit uncomfortable in your body?
Yeah. Firstly, thank you for having me.
It's so nice. I'm so happy you've made it work.
So yeah, it's actually crazy because I think with the term eating disorder and being like insecure with your body and everything, I think everyone relates to it some way. But I, as we were saying before, I didn't even realize I had planted certain seeds throughout my early like childhood that would then impact my later eating disorder. So when you said about how you struggled at even at primary school, that then sparked a memory of, yeah, when I was like comparing literally the width of my ankles, like the back of my ankles, to my friends. But I would never vocalize it. I would always, it's always just people in the back of my head. So I don't think I really fully realized that that was impacting how I would like look at my body. And then because I was a dancer, I mean, I've been dancing, well, I don't anymore, but I was a dancer from like the age of 3 up until like 21. So that whole duration of being in leotards, going to dance schools, looking at myself in the mirror all the time, they were all planting the seeds. But again, I wasn't fully aware. So I think there was one like significant moment that I remember when I think I was probably like 16 and I was having like a good old scroll on Tumblr at my grandma's house. And I wouldn't say I was insecure in my body then, but I just kept seeing these Australian models on there, and I think it sort of introduced the idea that maybe looking that way would make me happier, even though I wasn't necessarily sad. I just thought I could just get happier, maybe I'll just be a bit more confident than how I am now. So that was the most significant like time that really changed the whole game for me. But like you said, there's so many small things that happen throughout your childhood that lead up to that point. But no one's really aware. When you're that age, you're just not aware.
Yeah, and it's such a drip thing as well, you know? Like, it's not like there was one moment, even for myself, that I was like, right.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about sort of catalyst moments, and there are definitely things, like you said, there are moments that I remember being more prevalent in my experience of then moving down that disordered eating path, where I'm like, yeah, that probably had a big impact. But it doesn't just happen after one thing. It's a collective experience of, and it's so interesting that you reference your dance background, because I also was a dancer, you know, went to professional dance college, and, you know, like, my whole childhood, I'd actually wanted to be a professional ballerina. Mm. That had been my dream. And I very distinctly remember my my ballet teacher saying to me, you know, Alice, you're not going to have the physique to be a professional dancer. Like, very early on, as in like maybe 11, 12. Gosh. And so I think that at the time, maybe I didn't necessarily, like, I was a very determined kid. So I remember just thinking, right, well, I'm going to pivot and I'm going to do musical theatre instead. But even those things, it's like, I don't think we recognise the weight of our words and the words that are said to us when we're growing up and the effect that that can have on, like I said, that drip effect of, my body's not good enough. It's not quite right. Oh, this isn't right. Oh, that's not right. So I really appreciate that, you know, there wasn't one moment, but you can kind of recognise that there were things that, that led up to that.
And it's even like the non-verbal communication that I would always, like, just sort of bat an eyelid to. But that was such a important part to my, to getting to the point where I was, you know, having such bad habits with my food and my body, because I would just notice my dance teacher, like, maybe look down at my tummy and then just look back up. But it would be this, like, the smallest things. So yeah, it is ridiculous. It's awful.
I totally relate to that. You went on to develop an eating disorder, which you've been really open about speaking about. And, you know, just to kind of caveat this conversation, if this isn't right for anyone that's comfortable hearing about this right now, please feel free to come back at another time. But if we do go into, you know, that space, your eating disorder was something that I think was, you know, exacerbated, I think, as you said, by the period of lockdown where, you know, I guess, you know, for many people, it was a really isolating experience. And what else was there to do except, you know, a lot of people were encouraged to do more exercise and to, you know, get healthy and do all of these things. So I can see how that would have been really challenging. But can you tell me a little bit about kind of the journey into that and what that was like for you?
Yeah. So to be fair, it was an undiagnosed eating disorder. I've actually never been diagnosed, which is a whole nother topic we can talk about as well. But yeah, lockdown was definitely the worst time for me. I think, like everyone, we had no control of what was happening. So I've recently learned throughout, like, my time in therapy, which I've recently been going to, which is amazing, because I had no control, that the only thing I could control was what I was putting into my body and how I looked. And I think with so many other people, they had very different experiences during lockdown. And my sort of, the family dynamics were sort of going down and down, and that was really toxic as well. So there was a lot of things that were coming into play, and I was already very active. So instead of going to the gym, I would just do my workout at home like everyone else was really kind of doing. And because everyone was on Instagram at that point, it was so obvious to me that I guess everyone was being active. So I just had to join in. And the more I was doing that, obviously the more I was, it was a habit, and the more obsessed I was getting. And it's so interesting because every time I'd look in the mirror, no matter how much weight I was losing, I was still saying the same things to myself. I would never, ever see how much weight I was losing. And it got to a point where my friend, who, bless her soul, she hates being like confrontational. So she'll never, ever bring up any sort of serious situation. And she brought up this topic of how, like, I was losing lots of weight and she was worried about me. And that in itself was just a big eye-opener, because I was like, there's no way that she would bring this up if it wasn't serious. So I was looking into it more and still, like, very in denial. I was very, very in denial. I was very defensive. But also at the same time, I was so scared, because all I was wanting to do was just to be my healthier self. And at the time, I thought that was to be my skinnier self. So it was a really hard time, because it was like learning what was going on in the world, learning what I was doing to myself, and learning what healthy actually is, and like actually accepting the fact that some girls can have a six pack and look lean, and that is at their most optimal healthy self and state. But for me, that's just not the case. And I think accepting that was the hardest thing.
Just to pick up on a couple of things you've said there, I think there's a lot of misconceptions around eating disorders. And whilst you said you obviously didn't have a diagnosis, I think one of the things that is therefore most interesting for me is that you know, you referenced that there were people around you who were showing concern, but was there no point where anyone sort of said, Millie, I think there's something wrong here, or I think we need to get some help? And it was, was it just that you were a little bit in denial about that? And you know, like I've learned this because I definitely was in this point where you do become a master manipulator to some extent. You know, you're very good at telling lies and being very good at painting a picture of everything's fine, everything's great. So was there that going on? And was that kind of what made you, I guess, cover up the fact that things were worse than you were presenting?
Oh, 100%. It completely changed me. Like, it really made me in such a secretive person. And I didn't think I had it in me. But yeah, there were so many things that I learned how to hide and how to, again, like you said, manipulate to make people think that I was fine. And like, I know what I'm doing. I know my body best. But to be honest, because throughout my like upbringing, the eating disorder, undiagnosed eating disorder was very... It was very prevalent throughout the whole of my upbringing. But I think there were times where it would just get a bit worse and then it would be fine again and then it'd get a bit worse. And during the times where it was getting worse, that's when my mum would try and raise the situation and ask me if I'm okay. But because I was in such denial that I was so defensive and it would cause arguments all the time. And it really damaged my relationship with my family. So I think it got to the point where they kind of just gave up and they just thought, like, I knew they really wanted to help me, but it was kind of making it worse at the same time because I was sort of rebelling against it. So it was an awful toxic cycle.
I think actually that's one thing that I think people do not understand. And we have to recognize that eating disorders are mental illnesses. Mm. Like, there is, you know, I think, again, a big misconception about eating disorders is like this whole thing of, you know, just eat more. And I think a lot of the family support can be very much about not understanding why the person in front of them just can't eat more or like can't do what they think seems like such a simple solution to what is actually a much more complex problem. So I can see both sides in a lot of situations. A lot of people that I know who've had eating disorders is like, on the one hand, you have this person who's presenting as not eating enough and, you know, really struggling. And on the other side, you have a family who deeply cares, but has no support structure in order to deal with the mental illness that's going on here. And it just makes it really hard because the toolkit isn't necessarily there. It might have got better now, but I know, I'm sure at the time, your family just probably felt like at a loss as to what to do. And you know, with a lot of mental illnesses, I think what we have to recognize is until that person accepts that they need help, no amount of, you know, family telling you or friends or whatever can get you to the point where you actually want recovery.
Yeah, it is.
And so
it's the want. You need, like, you want to recover.
And I think that's such a big point to make, is that, like, you know, that the misconception that it's all just about wanting to be thinner and that, like, you know, it's almost like a vanity illness. Like, it's so toxic, because actually the reality is that person is suffering from a mental illness that needs proper structured recovery and help. And they've got to be at a point where they're ready to take that help. So I guess I'd love to hear what that point was for you. You know, you said that you had to relearn what healthy looked like. And I think that's a really nice way to put it, because I do think that, you know, so much of our misconceptions around health and well-being is that, like, the smaller we are, the healthier we are. So I'd love to hear, you know, what rebuilding and recovering really looked like.
Yeah, so I actually, the start of my weight gain journey was actually fueled by wanting to lose more weight. So I reached out to an online coach, because I saw a lot of her like before and afters and client testimonies and stuff. And I thought, that's great. Like, and a lot of them were on reverse diets. So they started with, you know, how they looked before, which was absolutely great and healthy. But I think with the reverse diet, it just helped drop their weight a bit more. And I thought, oh, okay, that's how I can lose more weight. Because I got to a point where I was restricting so much that I couldn't lose any more weight. My body was just holding on to anything that it could. I didn't know that at the time. So anyway, I reached out to this online coach and she said, yeah, we'll put you on a reverse diet. So I was like, great, let's go. And throughout that, I was actually gaining weight. I was obviously eating more calories. I was eating more food and I was still working out, but I was dropping my cardio because I was doing so much cardio at the time. And yeah, I was gradually putting on muscle and fat and the weight that I needed. But because it was so gradual, I think it didn't scare me as much as I thought it would have done. So that was such a blessing, because I think if I were to suddenly, you know, gain loads of weight over, like, within a few weeks, it would have completely made me go the other way again. So yeah, it started with the idea to lose more weight. But throughout that, I think I was really starting to notice that my body before was not looking healthy. It was not in the most optimal state, and I didn't know that until I sort of was coming out of that body. And it's really sad because I think the whole idea of gaining weight scares people so much that they don't even want to try. If I were to go into my weight gain journey knowing that I was going to gain weight, I wouldn't have done it. So yeah, it's a hard one because obviously it's such a unusual experience.
We'll be back after this.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome back to Give Me Strength. One of the things that I picked up on there is this idea that, and it's hugely around sort of body dysmorphia, and something that I think so many women live with, regardless of whether they have an eating disorder or not, is that the body that they present with isn't necessarily, you know, what I might see as being, you know, you presenting as being gorgeous and, you know, healthy and whatever, isn't actually what you're seeing in the mirror, which is a completely different story. And when you spoke about sort of looking back on images of yourself when you were at your smallest and most ill, you know, that you started to recognize that that wasn't necessarily the best place to be. And I think that I feel similar in that, like, now I look back on photos of myself and I'm like, oh my God, like, how did I not see it at the time? But I do think that there's just this real warped perception of like what we're striving for. And I think, you know, you used the word control before, and I think control is a really big one. And I think particularly in relevance to lockdown, where we were so out of control, I really empathize with the fact that, you know, for anyone that's struggled with eating and food and stuff, it does seem to be one of those things that we can just attach ourselves to as a way of being able to control something within our lives. And so I think that I really, yeah, I empathize with that completely, because lots of other stuff in our lives is out of our control, right? We can't control whether people like us or not, or like, you know, what's our job doing and whatever. But the food we eat and the exercise we do, like, to a certain extent, we can control those things. But there's a point where that starts to become really unhealthy. And, you know, I think that for you, I'm so interested at the fact that actually your recovery journey started with working with an online coach, which, like, I was like screaming alarm bells in my head, but like, if it worked for you, great. You know, like, I think, you know, there are so many, there's such a spectrum of, like, you know, coaches out there. So, like, you know, some are brilliant. After that process, so you start to gain a little bit of weight, you're recognizing that the body you're in now maybe is a bit healthier, and you're probably feeling a bit better in yourself as well by just eating more. What then sets you on this path of who you are today, which is, and I don't ever say, and I think it's really important to, I don't know whether you subscribe to this mindset as well, of sort of never saying that you're fully recovered from something, it's a journey.
Yeah.
And it's something that you work on every day and all the time, but, you know, it becomes a smaller and smaller part of you, but it's still a part of you that you are able to challenge. How do you go from being that person who's working with an online coach still, and probably still heavily in that kind of, like, you know, challenging mindset, to being Millie who sat here today and, like, glowy and happy and, you know, all these things?
God, honestly, it is such a blur at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, everything was all happening at once. So I was gaining weight. It was a massive, massive turning point in my life. And then at the same time, we were kind of coming out of lockdown, so that was a huge change as well. And then also at the same time, I was growing so much on Instagram, and, like, Instagram became more of an obvious thing for me to pursue. So yeah, it was never my plan to be where I am today, but I really strongly believe that everything happens for a reason, and I am so aligned to what I was meant to be doing. There are obviously days where I'm thinking, is this going to be a long-term thing? Like, is social media going to be around forever? We don't know. But during the whole weight gain phase, my Instagram was blowing up. So I think that was planting the seed for making me a lot more, I guess, supportive in my own journey, because I was seeing so many other people supporting me. And it helped me a lot in not only feeling like I wasn't alone, but knowing that this was the right thing to do. And yeah, with weight gain, it wasn't just the actual weight that I was gaining. There were so many things. I was gaining so much energy, which obviously, like, you would think, of course that's going to happen, but you generally don't really believe it. I just gained so much energy. And because I gained energy, I was a lot more clear in my head. I was thinking more straight. I was becoming just such like a bubbly, funny person. Like, I was laughing at lots of things. And everything that I was ticking off that sort of personality list, I was thinking this is how it's meant to be. So that really pushed me and like excelled me to do more of the Instagram and the weight gain and the body positivity and sharing everything that I'd learned from it, because what I was experiencing was like, I could never ever anticipated it. And I just want everyone else out there who might be struggling on, I say an eating disorder spectrum, because you can be, yeah, really unhealthy and really deep in your eating disorder, or you can be right at the start of it, like I was when I was like 14, 15. And it's just, yeah, showing that weight gain is so much more to just weight, and it brings life. Like there is just so many incredible things that come with it. And all my friends were saying, God, it's crazy how you've changed. Like, it is crazy. I knew it was deep inside of me, but yeah, it was never coming out. I was such a lost soul, empty. So yeah.
That's I do amazing. Think, and that's one thing that I really recognize. And I speak about that a lot in terms of like, you know, this pursuit of thinness and that some people are still on the journey of, and like total empathy with people who find themselves in that place, because we're all sold this dream, right? If we're smaller, we're better. And that narrative still persists, even mm-hmm. though there are people like yourself and myself and many, many others who are trying to show another yeah. way, but you know, it still does exist. I think that, you know, alongside that, it's really important that we talk about the side effects of pursuing that lifestyle. You know, like if you want to have the rippling abs and you want to be super, super lean, it's like the cognitive effect, you know, mm-hmm. I remember having days where you just feel so mentally fatigued, mm-hmm. you have no energy, even stringing a sentence together is like, oh my God. The social aspect is huge, you know, losing friends, becoming yeah. a real recluse. Like I remember being the queen of canceling plans yeah, and same, being able to yeah. like get out of stuff, anything that revolved around food, it was like, no, yeah. like I can't make it. But I would always be like really good at canceling and yeah. you know, like you just, your world becomes so small yeah, and does. I really relate to that and what you said. And I think it's really important that that's a big understanding for people that, again, like you said, are on that spectrum, is that life after being on an eating disorder spectrum, whether that be, you know, disordered eating disorders, whatever, is so rich mm. and offers you so much. And so to my next question, I think one of the things that I love is that you use your platform and you've really built such an engaged community of people who are so invested in this kind of journey that you're taking people on, of showing how amazing life can be with all the beautiful, fun, like things that life can throw at you mm-hmm. if you are able to recover from, yeah. you know, the restrictions that once held you back. So I love, and I think one of the things that's really important that you do is you set yourself these kind of mini challenges yeah. and you give them to your audience as well, you know, whether it's going to be, let's challenge ourselves to order something that's, you know, mm-hmm. out of our comfort zone or, you know, whatever it might be. Talk to me about doing those. Like, mm-hmm. is that almost in a way helping yourself at the same time as helping your community?
Yeah, 100%. So that idea came when I was still in my weight gain journey. So I was doing these little challenges for myself. And I thought, I know there's so many people who would love to do these challenges with me. And I think the community that I've built is where it is today because we all work together every day. And it was like we were just a family, which is why, like, where the name comes from, family, which I like.
I love it.
Yeah, the daily challenges were so, so good. And as I was, it was really interesting because I noticed in myself that I, with my whole weight gain journey and quote unquote recovery, I feel like there were long phases where I was so fine and free and there was absolutely no thought going on in my brain about questioning how much calories I was having or whatever. But then there'd be phases where it was a little bit more obvious to me. And I think that was really obvious on my page because sometimes I was doing the challenges and it was more of like letting my followers do that and I was sort of like mothering them, like helping them get through it. But then there were definitely phases where I was doing the challenges for myself and I had to share it with people because obviously life after weight gain is amazing. But like you said, there's always going to be a little niggle inside of you.
And I think that's what I love about you more than anyone, I think, is that you're really honest about those. Like yeah. I remember seeing something recently that you posted that I was like, oh my God, I feel like she's speaking to me. And it was to do with, I think, like seeing loads of people, I think it was around Christmas time and you were like, I'm really like triggered by loads of people that are like going for my Boxing Day run.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I was like sat eating my second box of chocolates. Yeah. And I was like, fuck's sake. But like, I really resonated with that because you said, and you've very, you know, like articulately put that, it was triggering for you and you sort of explained why and you sort of then related that to like, if anyone's going through the same, like know that you're not alone. Sometimes it's very hard to see this stuff and I'm on that journey with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for us to understand. You know, I prefaced earlier the conversation by saying, I don't ever see like an end goal when it comes to recovery. I think that, you know, when you're on this journey, it's sometimes a lifelong thing. You know, those little triggers can hit us off, and life events. I've got a wedding coming up. Like, I've got certain things where it's like, oh God, what am I going to do? You know, like, and there's so many things where you have to constantly challenge that inner voice. And I really love that about your content. And I think that it's so like reassuring to see someone that's being very honest about their recovery journey rather than just like day two, guys, I'm fine. Yeah. I'm amazing.
It's just not going to happen. It's not. In today's society, there's always people still, you know, giving toxic messages out online, which is so sad. And I think it's still like subconsciously feeding our brains, and a lot of the time you don't really know which voice to trust. But it's just making sure that at least if there is someone that you follow online who is going through the same thing, it's knowing that you aren't alone. And it's so cliche to say, but it does help. It helps so much. And yeah, I just like to remind people that it's not all daisies and rainbows at the end. It's still things.
What are some of the things now that you feel that you sort of use as your daily, weekly, I know monthly practices that you feel really help to keep you in a positive space? Like, you're on this recovery journey and like, you know, in your own words, you're in a good space now. But are there certain things that you find really help you to kind of stay grounded in that space?
What I do every day, or what I don't do every day, is scroll on anything, apart from TikTok, to be honest. But
it's so
like, I feel like I've built a good algorithm on TikTok.
So yeah, yeah.
It's so hard, makes me happy. but I really don't scroll. I don't look at anyone. I think the main thing that I did, which has helped, is unfollow so many people who I was following for toxic reasons. And I really had to be true to myself. I was like, is this person serving me any purpose in my life? And I had to just be straight with it. And I unfollowed a lot of people, or muted people, whatever. So that's something that, yeah, it comes into my day-to-day. I think what I've done is just remove tools that were helping me, or not helping me, but were encouraging me to track my steps or track my calories or anything. So I don't have a fitness watch anymore. I don't have my fitness pal. And with everyone's journey, it's so different. Some people can still really help. And I actually listened to a podcast about how fitness watches, like the good and bad things about fitness watch, and I so agree with it. And for me, I don't trust myself with them. Mm-hmm. So that was, that's something that I still do every day. I don't track my steps. Body checking is still something that I struggle to control, because you do just, like, sometimes it's...
And I think the hardest thing with that, sorry to interrupt, yeah, okay, but I do think the hardest thing with that is going to the gym.
Yeah.
Because, like, at my home, I know where my mirrors are. If I'm having a bad day, I walk on by.
Yeah, yeah.
I walk on by. Okay. I don't need to look. But I do think that there's something to be said. And actually, that's a big thing as well. Like, in my bathroom, you know, when you're, like, getting naked.
Yeah.
Like, I have mirrors there. Okay. I have a high mirror in my bathroom to do my makeup, but I don't have any, like, body mirrors and stuff. I think that really helps.
100%.
But I think that the gym can be a really hard one. I really feel that, like, it can almost catch you off guard.
Yeah.
Because it's not like your home where you can, like, be a little bit more chill about it. It's like, oh God, right. Yeah. Like, especially like around my cycle, like
100%.
I can have those moments. But I do think that, you know, one of my biggest tools of that, and I think body checking is probably one of the final things that I still can be challenged by, is like, it's almost like it's such a relevant information to me. Like, I, you know, when you have to like learn to repattern your brain to be like, my brain is telling me something, but it's also really irrelevant. Like, I almost let it, that very much that analogy of like, it goes in one ear, but it also comes out the other.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't happen every time. Like, I do think there's got to be some like serious honesty about how these things can affect you, me, you know, anyone that's on the recovery journey. But I do think that I try and tell myself like how irrelevant that information is. And I've recognized on your journey, and very similar to mine, that like strength has been such a grounding factor in trying to move away from looking at my body at the gym and actually like, what can my body do? Mm-hmm. Like, I know that for me personally, like, strength has been my savior.
Yeah.
That, you know, the process of getting stronger requires you to eat more, rest, and do all the things that actually prioritize health over aesthetics.
100%.
And so I know that that's been so crucial on my journey. Like, last year, my goal was to get 10 pull-ups. Like, I did it, and like I did it because I did it in such a way that didn't have anything to do with like the way my body looked. And I think that's really important. I recognize that in your journey, and I think it's something that you've spoken about as well in terms of how you've changed your approach to exercise. So can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was weight training before gaining weight, but like you said, it was all for the wrong reasons, and I wasn't fueling myself, and I wasn't doing it for the strength gains or anything like that. So when I switched that mindset, I was like, throughout my weight journey, I was gaining more energy. So I was naturally being able to lift more. And I really grasped on the deadlift goal that I was really wanting to achieve, like getting to 100K deadlift was like, I was like, that's all I need to do. Like, I am so happy if I reach that point. And once I got to that point, the happiness that I felt and the accomplishment that I felt was so unmatched that I knew that from that point, like it's strength all the way. Yeah, I like to have little things to focus on. So at the moment, pull-ups is one of them. Stiff leg deadlifts is another. Squats used to be one. Like I'm sort of going through all of them. It's interesting with my training at the moment because I've started to incorporate running again, which was a really scary point to come to because with running, I had such a bad relationship with it. I was only doing it to burn calories, only doing it to be able to probably eat maybe something more throughout my day. It was just really toxic. So I really wanted to wait for the right moment to incorporate running again because I'm not going to lie, because when I stopped doing all my cardio, I did notice that a lot of my cardiovascular fitness had gone downhill. So when I slowly incorporated gentle runs, gentle jogs, the motive behind that was to just really get up my cardiovascular fitness. So yeah, at the moment, I'm incorporating running into my weight training and it's like 3Ks. It doesn't need to be far. It doesn't need to be a 5K, just a 3K. And it's helping me realize that, yeah, running can become a bad toxic trait to have or like a habit to be in, but it can also be an incredible, thrilling, motivating exercise to incorporate into your life. And I'm in that situation now and it's the best thing ever. So I like mixing it up every now and then.
And I also think that like underlying all of that is just like enjoyment. Like
exactly.
When you're in a disordered space, like exercise and enjoyment aren't in the same room together. Yeah. Like they're just not. Whereas I think when you start to recover and you recognize that how fun it can be, you know, like I think that you can start to rebuild that fun element and that enjoyment element so that you finish the session and you're like, oh my God, I actually feel great as a result of that, rather than like checking your watch and being like, what have I burned? Yeah. You know, like I totally get that.
It's taking the pressure off.
Yeah.
You don't have to reach a certain number or certain anything. It's just, literally going into the gym, being free with it. You can have a plan, but if you don't want to do all the exercises, don't feel like you have to. It's not the be all or end all.
Mm.
And that, I think taking the pressure off has really helped bring that enjoyment into my workouts for sure.
I love that. Now talk to me about your new project. I know Vida's been around, but it's having a transition upgrade phase. So talk to me about that because it's really exciting.
Yeah. So ever since I saw sort of my job becoming a real thing, helping people was always the forefront of whatever I was doing. And having an app was like a lifelong goal. Being able to like give access to girls who, like me, was too scared to go to the doctors, too much in denial, didn't want to talk to anyone about it. Having that app I've brought to Instagram and society has really been such an amazing, incredible project that I'm working on. And I think it's a scary thing to do because eating disorders are so complicated. So I really wanted to make sure I did it right. And we've got an eating disorder specialist who has had about 15, 16 years of experience in the NHS. So she is incredible. She just knows everything about everything. And I've got her on board. We literally, as of today, we are taking on clients who are struggling with an eating disorder because before we just didn't have the qualifications for that. And it was killing me inside because I had this app, I had all the incredible features on it, but I just couldn't give it to the people who I really, really wanted to give it to. So yeah, it's incredible. And I don't think there's anything like it in the fitness industry at the moment.
I don't think so. And I think it's definitely serving a massive part of the industry that needs addressing. And I'm really proud and excited of you because I think that's such a huge step. And I do think that one of the best things about getting to a place where you'll feel like you're fully on your recovery journey is being able to give back to the people that are maybe further back on that journey and maybe just starting or aren't even started yet. So I think it's going to be amazing and I'm really proud of you and that is absolutely incredible. Millie, you've been an amazing guest today. Thank you so much for coming on. It's honestly been, it's just really lovely. Like I feel like I'm a few years ahead of you. You know, the same cyclical patterns kind of go through the industry and also you see people that are coming up underneath you who are going through the same things that you might have done. And I sort of look at you like from afar and just think like I'm really, really proud of your journey. And I think you should be so proud of yourself because it's not easy. And also when you play that journey out publicly, it's hard. And there's sometimes mistakes that we make and things that we, you know, do differently or whatever. But I really think that you are someone who seems to be in such a great place and really inspiring so many others. So thank you for coming on. Thank you, I wish you the best.
Thank you for having me. It's been so lovely to chat to you.
So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I'll be back on Friday for my Ask Alice. Again, if you have any questions for that, send us an email to the email that's in the show notes. If not, I'll be back next Wednesday for my next episode, and I look forward to speaking to you then.
Insanity Group.